This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Bob McDonnell is the Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Virginia, a very good friend of this program, and he joins us on the long line from his office in Richmond. Good afternoon, Mr. Attorney General. How are you doing today?
Coy, hi. Good to be on with you again.
Absolutely. Always look forward to it. Let's get right to it. You had a statement came out of your office on the anniversary, the fifth anniversary of 9/11, and I just want to tell you how touching I thought it was, and wanted to give you an opportunity here 5 years on to comment on this. One thing that really struck me that in the statement from your office regarding this. This five-year anniversary, you reference the personal sacrifices that are being made by men and women and their families here at home, and it sort of reminds us, you know, you write that these men and women aren't serving as Democrats and Republicans; they're serving under one flag as Americans, and it reminds us all to sort of stop for a minute and realize and think about that which unites us, and instead of focusing on the things that might divide us.
Well, you said it well, Coy, and I think there's so much in the country, particularly 55 days or so out from an election, where there's so much controversy about things that are that do divide us as Democrats, Republicans, Independents, others in the public policy arena. But on the cause of advancing freedom and democracy, and on support for men and women in uniform who take up the cause of arms to do what their country calls them to do, we should be extremely united. And September 11th, 5 years since the world stood still for a few minutes as America was attacked like no other day in history, it's kind of a sober reminder of the fact that the world has changed a little bit, that we do have enemies of freedom as terrorists around the world who attack American and Western interests indiscriminately, who hate what we stand for, those traditional values that Mason and Madison and Henry Jefferson thought were great, like religious freedom and civil rights and human rights that are the hallmark of American and Virginia democracy. People don't like that. And so I think rallying around these men and women, the 135,000 or so in Iraq and the others in Afghanistan, Kosovo, other places that are advancing freedom, we ought to really all unify around what they're doing. And, of course, I mentioned my daughter's first lieutenant in the Army serving in Baghdad, Iraq. She's actually down to just 3 weeks left after serving a year over there. Jim Webb just sent his son to Iraq, young Marine, last week. And others all over the state are affected either personally with a family member or indirectly by a friend or someone they know in the military. And so it's something Virginians can unite around to say that whether we agree or disagree on the war in Iraq, why we went in, how we're prosecuting that war, what we do agree on is that we're there now, that we must win, that if we win, it will create a historic democracy in the middle of a troubled area in the Mideast, and that we will be able to bring our troops home safely. And so for all those reasons, I thought it was important just to put that statement out. Governor Kane and I joined in several activities that day, working side by side to tell folks that we're continuing to work on homeland security. But the one thing we agree on right now fully is supporting our troops and our National Guard is critical.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And at the end of the day, you know, you sort of have to remember, you know, driving back and forth to the strip mall or to work or to soccer practice, we could sort of get lulled into thinking that this is the world, and it's not. This is an incredibly dangerous world, and there are people out there who are breathing just to see America destroyed, to see our great institutions crumble. And these are the same people who think that, you know, the halftime of a soccer game is a great time to cut people's heads off.
We had seen the signs of that for probably 20 years leading up to 9/11 with attacks in Beirut and in Lebanon and other places around the world. But Yemen, you know, we'd seen some of that where we'd lost some folks, but nothing on the magnitude of 9/11. I think that's the day that Americans woke up to say, wow, this new ideology of Islamic terrorism designed to destroy Western interests and the hate for freedom-loving people that believe in women's rights and civil rights and religious freedom is something that we never contemplated, that they would have such animosity that they'd perpetrate the kind of crimes that were committed on 9/11. And so it is a new world, and we've had to do a number of things in Virginia, the governor and I in particular, with homeland security and port security and doing a number of law enforcement and first responder and legal preparedness drills to make sure we're ready and working on funding formulas to make sure we get all of the assets to the right place based on the risk, not just the population. And so we've been doing a lot to really make sure that we're prepared. I think it's a tribute to this administration, to our brave men and women in uniform, that there's not been another attack since 9/11, that for 5 years
you're listening to Charlottesville
fight
right
to
now.
The terrorists, where they operate, where they train, where they live, so that they don't have the capacity and the resources to attack us once again on the Virginia soil. So it is something that I think will be here with us for a while. You know, I think most Americans probably look at the world and say, what are we going to do about it? There are so many seem to be part and parcel of this this terrorist organization all over the Mideast, but you know, it took after 70 years, we never thought that the Iron Curtain would fall either, and yet with some great leadership in the 1980s and great work by the United States military, we won the Cold War without firing a shot. So I think over time, Corey, and I think you said it earlier, is that, you know, the move of freedom throughout history has been the most powerful force that has shaped that history. And if we continue to work on exporting these ideas of democracy, that over time that is a more powerful force than guns and bullets. And I think we got to just have confidence that we win.
The Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Virginia, Bob McDonnell, is our guest today on Charlottesville Right Now. The phone lines are open at 977-1070. Betty is on the line in Charlottesville. Betty, thanks for the call. You're on with Bob McDonnell.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. And I appreciate having your guest on the line to talk to. I'm wondering, Attorney General McDonnell, if you would not feel that it was also a patriotic stance of people in our country to want to bring the troops home from Iraq, that would not also be patriotic, and that other people in our country might feel that to really fight the war on terrorism, we need to bring the troops home so that we're prepared to really fight the truly dangerous threat facing our country, which I think many people in this country feel is not in Iraq, but it really is Iran and North Korea, countries that have proven. Well, North Korea, for one, has nuclear weapons. Iran is way beyond Iraq in developing nuclear weapons, and that by spending lives of our military and also now $350 billion, that we aren't bankrupting our military in Iraq and thereby making the fight against terror truly more difficult for our country, and that the truly great threat to both us and Israel is not in Iraq, and that our enemies, Iran and other nations in the Middle East, are happy to see us in Iraq, and they are happy to see our men and women dying in Iraq, and they're happy to see us spending all this money. And I feel that we need to debate in this country whether this is truly the right policy, the right foreign policy that we should be following. And yet I feel that whenever we try to bring up these points and have this debate, many of us feel that we're called unpatriotic for wanting to get the troops out of Iraq so they really can protect us.
Betty, thanks for the call. It's a great question, and the Attorney General will answer that. We're going to continue this discussion on the other side of a quick break for some local news and weather. You're listening to Charlottesville Right Now. And when we left in the last half hour, Mr. Attorney General, Betty had called in from Charlottesville, and just to quickly sum up, she had asked, is it not patriotic to want the troops to come home? And she referenced the real threat to America being not in Iraq, but being, I believe she said, Iran and North Korea.
Well, Betty made a number of very good points in a very civil way, and I appreciate the way she presented her comments. And listen, she's absolutely right. With a daughter in Iraq like I've got, I certainly want the the American men and women in uniform to come home absolutely as soon as possible. But we have invested 3 years of hard work rebuilding infrastructure. We've seen three Democratic elections now with vote turnouts as high as 70%, incredible exercise of the love of freedom that the Iraqis have. And so I think we do need to have an organized plan for withdrawal, but it has to be part and parcel of training of the Iraqi security forces and Iraqi military so that they can keep the peace between Sunnis and Shiites and between all the foreign terrorists that have come in to disrupt the peace process over there. So I fully agree with her. Americans are free to display their feelings in any way that they so choose under the First Amendment. I happen to think that we need to win. This has now become ground zero for terrorist activity. This war has never been against the Iraqi people. It's been against the Iraqi dictators who have now been removed, and it's now against the extremists from all over the Mideast who are coming in to make Iraq the battleground. We're not fighting the Iraqi people. I think by and large they appreciate the fact that we're rebuilding their country. She's also correct. I think that North Korea and Iran certainly represent terrific threats. You've got unpredictable dictators involved with heading up both of those countries. You've got two of them that have a goal of obtaining nuclear weapons and employing them if necessarily. So she's correct that those nations also represent great threats, not only the United States, but to the West generally. So I'm in full agreement. I'd like my daughter's going to be home in 3 weeks on a regular rotation anyway. She's supposed to go back in 9 months back over there. But I think we need to have a full court press for well-trained Iraqi security forces so they can keep the peace so we can come back home.
You, just to change gears here, your office announced recently the Virginia Court of Appeals had upheld Virginia's anti-spam statute.
Right.
Can you give us a little background on this and sort of underscore the significance for us about what this means?
Virginia, of course, is home to over 50% of the internet traffic around the nation with AOL and others, and it's very important to keep this great new medium of the internet free from spammers and identity thieves and child pornographers, and we've been launching a sustained effort over the last couple of years in Richmond to help set the statutory climate to do that. Back in 2003, the General Assembly, at the request of my predecessor, Jerry Kilgore, passed the nation's first anti-spam statute, Coy, and essentially said that it is against the law. In fact, it's a felony to send out on an unidentified basis, that means you hide the source of the emails, more than 10,000 emails in any 24-hour period and thereafter to arrive pecuniary benefit of more than $1,000 from those emails. The whole idea is you got to keep the internet free from commercial clutter and to have people who send out emails with hiding their identity because they're basically, many of them, fraudulent schemes and make a bunch of money as a result of these wide, broad spamming efforts. And the defendant in this case, named Janes, was convicted in November 2004 of the first nation's first felony spam violation. He got 9 years in the penitentiary from a jury up in Loudoun County, and it sounds like it might be a lot, but what happened is this guy made literally millions of dollars with these various fraudulent schemes, sending out hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars of email with his address misrepresented. And through these various schemes, defrauded people of, like I said, countless millions of dollars from his residence in North Carolina. But he was able to be prosecuted in Virginia and has been brought to justice. The Court of Appeals unanimously upheld his conviction, saying that all of his claims that it was a violation of his First Amendments and commercial free speech rights was not founded. So we're very happy with that. We expect an appeal to the Supreme Court of Virginia, and we anticipate that being heard sometime later this year. But we're going to do everything we can to uphold that statute. It's important to AOL. It's important to people that use the Internet in their business that we keep it free from these fraudulent spamming schemes.
Mr. Attorney General, what should folks do if they're, because I don't know anybody out there that still doesn't get a lot of spam. I know I do every day, and some of it will slip through, you know, the controls, and you just show up right there in my regular inbox, and instead of going right to trash. Is there anything, whether it's your office or another office, that folks might have access to, just to say they're still having a problem, and if there's any kind of trend or anything like that?
Yeah, and the key is it's not just spam itself. It's the unidentified spam where there's essentially a fraudulent attempt to misrepresent who's sending it out, so that when somebody responds to one of these schemes, they're really not doing business with who they think they are. That's the essence of the offense. And, of course, tremendously high volumes, 10,000 or more in a day, or more than 100,000 in a 30-day period. There are ample spam filters and blockers out there that are effective, they're getting better. You're correct that a lot of them still slip through. But if somebody thinks they're a victim of some fraudulent scheme with spam or identity theft or phishing or farming over the internet, various schemes are out there, they can do one or two things. Contact local law enforcement, or alternatively contact my office. We have a whole section of our website that gives information about these various electronic schemes. And if they'll look at our website at www.vaag, that's VirginiaAttorneyGeneral.com. They can get a lot of information, including our toll-free number. We can take the complaint and investigate.
Bob McDonald is the Attorney General for the Commonwealth of Virginia and a very good friend of this program. He joins us once a month for a very special edition of Charlottesville Right Now. The phone lines are open, folks, at 977-1070, and we invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a comment for Attorney General McDonald, we'd love to hear from you. Now, I know this isn't exactly your purview, but the General Assembly is getting ready to reconvene in a few days and take on the issue of transportation. And Speaker Howell of the House of Delegates and Delegate Wardrop announced today a big package of VDOT reforms, which I think most people that I know, at least, will be very happy to hear that the General Assembly is going to take a very serious, detailed look at ways that we might be able to improve VDOT. And I just wanted you to give you an opportunity. Like I said, I know this isn't necessarily what your office deals with, but clearly the Richmond will be very focused on this issue in the next few weeks, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to comment on that if you'd like to.
It's pretty clear that transportation funding and transportation administration is a top priority for the Virginia General Assembly. They're getting ready to go back into a special session at the end of this month, and proposals are now being made for that, for us to be continue to be a business-friendly state. And, of course, we just were ranked by Forbes magazine as the most business-friendly state in the country. We've got to have the education and transportation infrastructures to sustain economic development. So I'm delighted to see this initiative today. It's one of many things that that need to be done. Money is clearly a piece of the solution, but rethinking and redoing the way we do business in the 21st century is an important part of that. I know the Speaker and Delegate Wardrop and others have been working for quite some time to put together a comprehensive set of reforms with the Virginia Department of Transportation. We got a lot of fine public servants over there. But like anything, as long as you've got a very large monopoly organization controlling the way you do business, there may be some private sector initiatives and some competitive initiatives and some just creative things that you can do to breathe new life into the organization. And I know that the governor just appointed a brand new commissioner just 2 days ago, who I think will be receptive to some of this new thinking. So I'm delighted to see this this initiative. I think there's a host of other things that they're going to be looking at, from proposing a constitutional amendment to protect the Transportation Trust Fund, which I championed for a number of years in the General Assembly, a broader use of tolls and public-private partnerships to be able to leverage some of the state money and have the private sector take some of the risk but get some of the benefit through these partnerships. I would certainly hope they take some of the huge surplus that we've got, over $1.4 billion the last couple of years, and divert some of the revenue streams out of the general fund to transportation that have been creating that surplus. We certainly can afford to do that, and I strongly urge them to consider doing that, and then they'll probably be looking at some other fees that might be increased to support roads as well during that time. But I certainly applaud the Speaker and the Transportation Committee Chairman of putting forth a broad proposal to reform VDOT. I think it's time, and we'll certainly help work through that with them.
And we'll be following that story in the next few days, certainly over the next few weeks. This is going to make a lot of headlines, folks, so get ready for that. Bob McDonald is the Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Virginia. The phone lines are open, folks. We've got him for one more segment. If you've got a comment or question for your Attorney General, let's hear from you at 1070. Mr. Attorney General, the Virginia, certainly the Tidewater region, is no stranger to the effects of hurricanes and tropical storms which move up the coast out of the Caribbean. And in the wake of these storms, we oftentimes, it's not infrequent that you might see efforts at price gouging. And would you remind folks again that Virginia has a pretty severe statute when it comes to this kind of thing, and your office is certainly set up to handle this stuff?
Well, it is. Let me, first of all, congratulate you on your grass seed, Cole.
Thanks very much.
Up, as we speak.
It's looking good.
Yes. The anti-price gouging statute's been in place in Virginia for about 3 years in the wake of some storms and events in the early part of the decade. The General Assembly passed a statute that allows the governor to declare a state of emergency and within 30 days thereafter to have a period of time where complaints about raising prices to what's called an unconscionable level for commercial goods, for consumer goods and services in the wake of the disaster can be reported to the Consumer Affairs Division, investigated by our office, and then prosecuted to seek recovery for those merchants that might try to take advantage of our citizens during times of disaster. The obvious reason is that all the rules of supply and demand generally go out of the window. It's not a normal economy when you've had a hurricane, you don't have water, you don't have ice, you don't have generators, but you've got a tremendous demand for those. And so it's been triggered several times. We've prosecuted several gas stations up in Northern Virginia in the wake of Hurricane Katrina, where the supplies were short and the prices went, and some of those places went up 50% or 100% in a 24-hour period. Those were deemed to be unconscionable. We filed the appropriate claims and were able to settle on behalf of the citizens and restore the money. This year, the General Assembly took another step to give the governor the authority, effective July 1st, to order a merchant to immediately reduce the price to a market price in order to make sure that goods and services are delivered to citizens. So he did not use that in the wake of the recent storm, but it is a tool available. And this bill, as well as some of the other bills that we've got with fraud statutes for those occasional contractors that will take advantage of people in the wake of a storm because they know there's FEMA money, there's a lot of insurance money, and there's some fraud that occasionally goes on. All these are designed to try to restore people's lives to the status quo as quickly as possible in a time where you've got an uneven playing field because the regular supply and demand isn't in effect. So we do have that. We're still in that 30-day period, and if any listeners might feel that in the wake of this recent storm that they were a victim of price gouging, they can certainly make that report to the Office of Consumer Affairs, and we'll look at it.
One issue here in Central Virginia that a lot of folks have been talking about, and it's certainly making headlines, and they're discussing it in detail on our morning program here, is the fact that gas prices in the Charlottesville region are generally much higher than surrounding regions. You can go into the valley or down towards Lexington or down into Buckingham, and the prices seem to drop by 20 or 30 cents a gallon. And I guess this is just a lot of this has to do just with simple market forces, that Charlottesville is certainly a more of an upscale area than Buckingham and can be priced higher, and the cost to the deliverer is certainly higher for real estate and things like this. But if folks are concerned, I just want to remind them that also in that realm, it doesn't have to be a disaster. If they ever feel like they're being taken advantage of in the marketplace, your office is always certainly willing to listen.
That's true, although most of those wouldn't, that wouldn't be a price gouging situation because, as I pointed out, that's only within 30 days after declaration of a state of emergency by the governor, which we're still in for another 2 weeks. But if people generally, Corey, you're correct, feel like they've been a victim of consumer fraud, whether it's identity theft or whether it's door-to-door sales of some fraudulent merchandise or some telephone or mail scam, any of those kinds of things, we have an Office of Consumer Protection here at the Attorney General's office that can investigate those. By statute, I am the lawyer, if you will, for the consumer, for the people of Virginia. We represent them in a variety of circumstances, and so if people do feel that they've been a victim of fraud, we can certainly look into that. All that information is on our website, and we'd be glad to help.
Absolutely. What other things are on your front burner for your office right now? Any other initiatives that you have going on that you'd like folks to know about?
Well, the two major pushes that we've got right now, one is the Youth Internet Safety Task Force. We're trying to build on the successes we had in the General Assembly this year to crack down on violent sexual predators who attack children. We had major success this session with 25-year mandatory minimum sentence and mandatory GPS tracking of these dangerous offenders. But now we're trying to take that battle to cyberspace to help to improve the laws to assist law enforcement in going after the problem of sexual predators who troll on the internet for young children. And we've seen that unfortunately happen in a number of cases where kids are victim either by pornography over the internet or they arrange a meeting in a chat room with somebody who really is a predator. And it's a complicated problem with jurisdiction and tracking of these offenders over the net, but it's also a major challenge for us to try to help educate parents so they understand that this, even though the internet is a powerful tool, kids get great information and education on the internet, that it can be a dangerous thing. They've got to monitor what their children do and use filters, watch the chat rooms, and make sure they're not getting victimized.
You know what? Okay. I'll just interrupt you real quick. You know what has absolutely blown my mind over the last week? You know what? I have a 4-year-old daughter. She knows how to go and click on the button. She knows how to open the internet browser. She knows how to find the Nick Jr. button. She knows how to go to Nick Jr. and choose the different games that she wants to play. 4 years old. And she's operating that mouse and moving it around and getting on and off the internet. Of course, she knows that, you know, it's like TV. She has to ask permission to go do it, and we'd like to be in the room. But it just, I had no idea that a 4-year-old mind could be capable of that.
Well, you and I grew up in the slide rule and the paper and pencil era, Coy, and our young kids are into the cyber world, the high-tech world they grew up with, and they're generally more computer literate. And that goes to the heart of the problem, is parents don't often know and don't understand or may not be in computer literate themselves, but their kids can run circles around them. And all parents need to do is take a little interest, ask the basic questions about, you know, what are you doing on the internet, and find out at least how to turn it on, how to look at the websites that they might have been searching, how to buy filters from their ISP so they can protect their kids. One other thing we're doing that's important right now is this whole area of regulatory reform to take a march through Virginia's 24,000 pages of regulations and find out which ones don't make sense anymore, which ones can be done by technology better, which ones are just dumb and can be changed.
Yeah, this is a terrific idea.
From citizens and business leaders around the state on what to do. You can look at our website. Again, we've got a separate email set up for that to mail us at regreform@oag.state.va.us. We want your input on regulations, particularly ones dealing with agriculture, small business, and health care. That's the first three we're going to take on.
Bob McDonald is
really like the input of the citizens.
Bob McDonald, the Attorney General for the Commonwealth of Virginia. Thank you, sir. We've enjoyed it and look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you, Corey. I appreciate talking to your listeners today.
Absolutely. Let's take a break for CBS News here at the top of the hour. This is Charlottesville Right Now.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.